Heather Rounds, welcome to The Signal.
Thank you.
So tell me how you came to write this book. How did this project begin?
Well, in 2007, I had just finished my master's at a local university, and I was working for a local publisher, and I was quite bored and feeling like I needed to get out of town for a while. I'd been here since 1995, and I had grown up traveling a lot and just felt like I needed to go somewhere. So I found online, actually, a job for teaching at a local international school, an English-speaking school. And I'd say within 2 weeks, I had the job because in the phone conversation that I had with the headmaster of the school, it became pretty clear that they were trying to sell me the job more than I was trying to sell them on having me there, because at that point, nobody really wanted to go over there.
Now, see, some people say, I wanted to travel, I wanted to go somewhere. You think New York, maybe California, but Iraq and Northern Iraq.
Northern Iraq.
Kurdistan, that's a strange place to aim for.
Yeah, you know, I had met a few Kurds, and I knew a little bit about the history of the place, but not too much. And then after I found this ad and something in me said, answer it, and I did. And then I started to learn more about the particular town, Erbil, sometimes called Haller, and I became fascinated by it. You know, I've always been fascinated by archaeology and strata and just the idea of being in an ephemeral place, someplace that's really moving and changing quickly.
And how long were you there?
I was there a year, and I started to work at the local school, but I didn't really have a lot to do. There's not a lot to do. There was less to do than there is now. I know it's changed a lot even since I was there. So I had a colleague who was working at this local English-speaking newspaper, and he needed to give up his job, and he asked me if I wanted it. So I spent most of the time after that working there, and it was altogether a year.
So you kind of got out in the world a little more than just going and teaching at the school, I would imagine, with a newspaper job.
Yeah, well, you know, I was easy to hire because I spoke English and I knew how to do layout and design and I could copy edit, and there weren't a heck of a lot of people there that were doing able to do all those things. So, you know, after school, about 2 or 3 days a week, I would go down to the newspaper and I would copy edit whatever they needed copy edited or laid out or what have you. And then I had a column that I wrote once a week under an assumed name. I requested I do it under an assumed name. And then I would do these arts and culture pieces, which actually ended up being kind of cursory compared to the kinds of reporting that other people I knew working for independent newspapers were doing. This particular paper was a local paper run by the Kurdish regional government, so it was party-backed. And so there wasn't a lot of hitting raw nerves going on in this paper. You know, I definitely was like war zone light. You know, by no means was I really in the belly of the beast. It's a lot different in the north in terms of just you don't quite feel the day-to-day nuances of violence. But it does creep up in interesting ways. Like, you know, I had a friend of mine actually from Lebanon, and I went, actually this took place in Beirut when I went to visit him and his family, but we were driving down this road in Beirut, and he starts laughing and he says, you know, it's funny, but we just passed the spot where 2 years ago a car bomb went off, and when I was looking in the rearview mirror, and I didn't really know how to react to that, but it really drove home, not that people treat it casually, but there definitely is sort of a different way they carry that kind of stuff with them every day. You know, people, one of the reasons that I felt like writing this book was to tell some semblance of the stories that I got. And I didn't always get full stories. Sometimes you'd get these little remarks people would make, and then sometimes you would just get these really long narratives. And I wanted to kind of encapsulate some of those things. I feel like there are people who sharing those things is very important to them.
It's an interesting book. It's not a novel in the traditional sense. You know, the book that you, I guess I should say, you came back from this assignment and put this into a book, which you call a novel, but it's not a traditional novel in
right.
the traditional sense, a novel. But I wanted to read the author's note to kind of give people a sense mm-hmm. of them, if that's okay.
It's, sure.
It says, this book consists of events, sentences formed from moleskin notes, anecdotes, oral histories, people, all of it carried a far distance. In some ways, alterations have intentionally been written in out of respect for those involved. In other ways, changes have occurred naturally. In that way, recollection lives on, separate from our experience. Which I think is a great way of talking about memory and how we collect experiences mm-hmm. and bring them back and try to make sense of them. I mean, you have all these fragments and sort of pieces of conversations and people you mm-hmm. meet and places you go. Did you just really bring back a bunch of materials and sort of sort through them and put it together that way?
I did. Actually, the year after I was there, I moved to China for a year to work at a university because I wasn't quite ready to come back yet, but I knew that I was ready to go somewhere else. So I went to China and I had this Moleskine notepad that I had with me all the time to mostly write down, you know, how to say a word, but also I would write down these little images or things that I came across. I also had a laptop with me, and I kept lots and lots of notes and things, and I kept a regular journal as well. So when I got to China, I was taken by the contrast. People were much different. People did not want to share, and people weren't just oozing this sort of outgoing energy. Then I missed that. And I found it, in that respect, a lot lonelier there. So I took to writing a lot, and that's when I started putting together the notes. And then when I got home, I finished it when I got back to Baltimore in 2009. And essentially, I just took the bits of writing and literally cut them up and laid them out to see how they would look next to each other on the floor and just sort of make them piece together in a way that made sense.
Well, I wonder if you wanted to read something sure. from the book to give us a sense of what this is really all like.
You know, the book is written in these little small vignettes, some of them a sentence, some of them a page and a half, and ideally they all sort of over time as the book develops come together as their own story. But this particular little vignette is called Ishtar Was Here. The ancient citadel, the original city, an abandoned clay fortress on a high dirt hill, sick cats where the Peshmerga soldiers slipped to sleep, just past the rusty pile of sunflower oil cans and left of the blue bronze gated bathhouse, a shanty corner of couches, armchairs, soldiers slugged under mildew carpets, smurf curtains, cockeyed rifles and trousers, inside the scalloped horizon of satellite dishes, an illusion of tight containment. The newspaper says, make a story out of it. So far, she has the slack-eyed rug seller, saying he knows Ashurnasirpal was here 900 years before Christ, and Nebuchadnezzar stole it from Sennacherib, and Darius from him. Then came Alexander the Great, Mithridates, and the Mongols, then Ishtar. Confused, she asked, Ishtar lived here? The goddess? Yes, of course, his eyes barely unleaving. They came here to pray at her feet for good battles. He knows because this is where his father was born, in a hole carved from the clay wall. He's not sure of much more, except he knows the ground would rise each time someone came and stole the city from someone else. The new king hung the flayed skin of the last on the wall, letting everyone below know a new city was crushing the last, countless times, piles upon piles, until no one could say what was. If Ishtar lived here, shouldn't there be some sign, like a statue, she asks. Her translator says to her, there are no facts. Don't look.
That's Heather Rounds reading from her novel, There. It seems fascinating to reflect, even with all these notes. Do you recognize everything that you brought back, or does time change your impressions of was there ever a contrast between what you brought back in your mind and what you brought back on paper?
Yeah, you know, the whole time I was there, I just felt very disconnected in so many ways. You know, when I moved there, I lost my luggage and I never actually got my luggage. So my parents would, you know, mail me things, but that would take like 3 months for me to actually get things. So I had to buy new clothes, and I couldn't always find things that I never really found clothes that I felt like myself in. And if I got like a headache, it was hard to find medication for that. So I just kind of felt not myself.
You were really submerged in this then. That's crazy.
More than I thought I would be. It definitely made me more of a minimalist and to be more resourceful. I definitely look back now and feel like I'm glad that I went through it because I do feel like it did change me.
Well, Heather, thanks so much for coming in. I really enjoyed the book, and good luck with all your future endeavors.
Thank you so much.
Heather Round's novel There is the winner of the 2013 Emergency Press International Book Contest. Her poetry and fiction have appeared in Pank, The Baltimore Review, and Big Lux. She's also a co-founder of the roaming curatorial collective, the Rotating History Project. For The Signal, I'm Lisa Morgan.